Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better, better,
we get better, better.
We get
BB,
we get BB,
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 BB.
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
Thank you, Harry. All right, touch gloves. Let's get it on. A Game 7. Welcome to it. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Blackshirt Husker, NFLer Jay Moore, I'm sure is pacing around. Not that he has a favorite tonight, but he'll be back in and no doubt will explain to us how in the hell you actually rush JT Barrett. Plenty of Nebraska, Ohio State to get into as well. The midweek edition. And Coach Jerry DiNardo with us in 15 minutes, Big Ten Network. He did the breakdown, of course, on BTN Live, getting the answers for you, Nebraska fans, on the Jordan Westerkamp non-pass interference. We'll get Coach's thoughts also on Ohio State and Nebraska. Mike Shewhart, Shuey, in with us in about 40 minutes or so, a little less than. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment is coming up. Thoughts on Tiger Woods. Get his take on the John Daly, 30 for 30. And then Brad Edwards, next hour. Big weekend of games in the Big Ten. Alabama, LSU, and Nebraska, Ohio State. So Brad Edwards, College Game Day ESPN insider. And his take on the first college football playoff poll that came out last night. Big Ten's looking good. A jock doc for you. Numbers to join, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Lot to get to, Cubs Tribe. The thoughts on the Friday nights of the Big Ten and football season next year. And we can spend some time, too, on the journey and the wonderful tribute to Sam Foltz last night. TJ, how you feeling? You're a huge baseball guy. Truth be told, once it got to a touchdown lead for Chicago, I kind of checked out and channel surfed a bit, keeping an eye on Cleveland, Chicago. And you have two fan bases that are the two fan bases above all because of their history. They are the least likely two fan bases to want a Game 7 because of the, oh no, the other shoe's going to drop, something bad will happen, what's going on, and the agony and stress. Who's a bigger mess as we're about 3 hours from first pitch? Cub fan or Cleveland? I know who has more momentum. I know who was up 3-1. I know who's come back to win the last two, to even things up at 3-3. But right now, it's anyone's game. Momentum's on Chicago's side because of pulling it off. Kluber's on the Tribe side. If you were to pick which fan base is more sick with worry and doubt right now, because you know the other side of the pillow here for the Cub fan, well, great. We got to Game 7. Now we're going to lose it. And it's going to be that much more painful. There's going to be that much more anguish. Came all the way back just to fall. And then there's Cleveland fan, and there's a little bit of a safety net. Not all Cleveland fans in baseball or LeBron and Cav fans. But from a city standpoint, if you're from there, you did get a title. And it ended your drought since the Jim Brown era. Who's a bigger mess right now? You can also throw a third horse into this race because Ohio State fans freaked out also based on how their season's gone the last 4 weeks. They're not quite up to death grip level compared to Cleveland Indian Chicago Cub fan, but they're not feeling great. I'm going to say Cub fans are not. You're happy you're still in it. You have a chance to win it tonight. But you're not as locked in slash enjoying the moment. If I'm wrong, dial up and tell me I'm wrong, Cub fan, because I know there's a million of him, million of you, either new or long time. It's a bandwagon that never gets full.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the Royals around here.
Yeah, and I'd say I'm more of a big Royals guy than a baseball guy, but, you know, because I think baseball's a little slow and boring, but we'll save that discussion for some other time. But I think it's more Cubs fans who are more nervous tonight. One of the reasons that you mentioned was if you're a Cleveland Indians fan, you're likely a Cavaliers fan, and so you were brought a championship this past summer to end that long-term drought. So I got to go with Cub fan tonight. I think they're fighting all the way back to Game 7. They know they're in it, so they're pretty excited, but just knowing that the other shoe could drop.
It's Lucy football, Charlie Brown, boom.
Yep.
We'll see if it's different. And you heard Harry Carey. I think that was 87 I pulled off of YouTube.
Mm-hmm. It sounded like 87.
That's not the number of Bud Heavies he had before the wrap-up show. That was the year of Harry's post-game there. Listen, I just hope it's a great ball game. I hope there's drama. A lot of people have been brought back to baseball because of these two fan bases.
Mm-hmm.
They've been long suffering. And I don't know that I've met a, and maybe you can differ on this opinion, but I've not met a Cub fan or a Indian fan that's a jerk. Met a lot of Red Sox fans. Met a lot of Yankees fans. There's a couple of my own family that can rub you wrong. Not you, Uncle Andy. I'm talking about my own son. A little entitled. Spoiled puke. Oh, the Yankees are the best. You've been brainwashed. So, who gets it done tonight? Why does it get done? And I said Cleveland in seven. And just your basic rundown here for the game tonight. It's really going to be about, and I don't look at Kluber, and I know he's on short rest. Listen, Tito's had him on pitch counts and also a line in the sand. You are not going beyond the sixth. You're not throwing more than 90 pitches. So despite 3 days rest, he's still, air quote, now watch him get shelled, relatively fresh.
Mm-hmm.
He's allowed one home run, opponents hurting 200 against him. The key for me tonight, and just looking at the series and the trend, when Cleveland's won, Carlos Santana's gotten on base.
Yep.
When they've lost, he hasn't. Cleveland needs to get to the sixth, turn it over to Miller, turn it over to Allen, and that's been their formula for a 3-1 lead. Now, for Hendricks, I mean, this guy, speaking of Greg Maddux, and that's a large step because Maddux went 15 wins or better 10 consecutive years. Mad Dog was awesome, but he wasn't overpowering. The outside corner is going to be key tonight, 62% from baseball stats. That's where Hendricks' out pitch has been. That's where he's going to go. He's got a great mix of pitches, got a good cutter. And yes, he's been beautiful at getting ahead of batters. And Madden's going to treat this thing. I think Chicago, the players will go in here even, keeled. I think Tito's been in this situation as well. So I think mindset-wise, I think the players will enjoy it. I think the fan bases are going to be a mess. And I think I agree with you. I think Chicago's fan base is a bigger basket case right now.
Yeah,
that's just some research I have done.
Yeah.
I have reached out to many Cub fans I know, either in the city or around, and it's been, it's just going to be heartbreak. Right now, our old partner Gus.
Yeah.
Gus is in his office with a fifth of Jim Beam, trying to get ready for tonight. Gus, if you're listening in Columbus, not outing you, I can envision what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And the stats say whoever is leading after the sixth inning is going to win this game.
It's what
because of the strong bullpens,
happens.
Especially for Cleveland. And it sounds like, I mean, he threw last night, but Arrieta like told Madden he's good for 20 pitches tonight. And maybe since some of the other bullpen guys for Chicago are struggling, they might bring in Lackey or somebody like that.
That's their next.
So I think that's what they're going to do. I was a little, you know, I wouldn't question either of these managers because I think if I had to choose, I think these would maybe be
the two
managers. But I was a little curious why Madden would use Chapman last night when they had that big run of a leave.
They don't care about him. And nor should
they, because
he's going to go ski mask and gun, and the highest bidder is going to get him here in about 2 weeks.
Well, in 2 weeks, but you got to make sure he's fresh for tonight, Game 7.
The dude is all about
intimidation. I know he's
the guy's
crazy
all
arm,
about
so, but we'll
intimidation,
see.
And he's fine. Okay? They've been fairly cautious with him. And quite honestly, the Yanks weren't ahead that often to use him before they got him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's fine. He knows the moment.
All right.
And Madden shouldn't be cautious. You had to win. And based on his gut, why let Cleveland hang around? Why give him any hope? Just shut him down. Now, from a set of nervous fan bases in Cleveland and Chicago, to some fan bases that need to be saying thank you to Commissioner, and we'll call him Santa Delaney. This just came out. Big 12 will begin Friday nights in 2017. That is right, Friday night football.
Big 10.
Can we all go yay? When's the last time you watched a Friday night college football game? Not because Solich was on. Never is your answer.
No.
Did you watch Washington Stanford? Did you make a beeline home? Okay.
Yeah.
That was it. How did that do? Stanford's not been great. People got to see Washington a little bit. But come on. Really? This is a step too far in equality. And it's a step too far in equality because your big-time programs, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, Nebraska, and I'm going with attendance on top of history. These guys won't be forced to play Friday nights. But teams like Purdue and Illinois that have been struggling, Indiana, Northwestern's fan base doesn't give them the props they deserve. It's a ghost town a lot of the time. Michigan State's fan base has been good when they're good. Okay? So this is a crumb dropped to the lower class of the Big Ten in football. And I understand about spotlight, and I understand that there were 16 games on TV when Commissioner Delaney took over the Big Ten. Now there are 95 games on TV every Saturday. I get creating a viewership window opportunity, but it isn't going to do anything. You're not going to get home to watch, and I know Indiana's been pretty decent this year, but you're not going to race home to watch Purdue, Illinois on a Friday night. Every 3 years, you're going to stick somebody like a Nebraska on. And the old Thursday nights were cool. I remember Nebraska playing Southern Miss through my bachelor party on a Thursday night, watched the Southern Miss-Nebraska game. I get that. That was before Thursday night NFL.
Well, I was going to say, just to play devil's advocate, the Nebraska-K-State game Thursday night.
That
I enjoyed
too.
That.
That worked too.
Is it just because it's Friday and not Thursday?
Yeah. I mean,
because that's more for high school football?
I think it's more for high school football, and people just do things on Friday night. You're done with work. You get out. If you have kids, great, and you're going to their game as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I don't think there's a lot of folks. People are in love with high school football and attending them. There are a lot of fans, but you're going because your kid's playing or you have a neighbor boy that's playing or, mm-hmm. or a daughter. That's what it is, okay?
Yeah.
It's not something that you're going to stop doing because college football's there, but it's never had to be a choice.
Yeah.
Now you're making it a choice occasionally. And I just hate this. You're too good right now, Big Ten, to stoop to this. And I know money talks, and it's part of the payment, and there you go. It's part of the deal you made with ESPN, ABC, and Fox. But I don't have the data in front of me, so I'm half-cocked here, so forgive me. But I just don't see that was a real win for the Pac-12 early this year, putting Stanford and Washington on. Great, you're the only game in town across the country in a September showdown between two ranked teams at the time, but you could have done that on Thursday, or you could have made it your prime time. You have a thousand choices on Saturday, and right now Friday night is completely open. So why not take advantage of it? That all makes sense. I don't think people are going to stop what they do Friday nights. If you're taking the wife to dinner, taking the girlfriend to dinner, going out with the kids, or just having a couple with some friends, you might watch it because it's on. But for the most part, it's not destination TV on Friday night. no matter who the matchup's at. You're not going to put Nebraska, Ohio State on a Friday night. No, you get the Saturday night showdown at 7. You're used to that. And I don't think retraining or asking people to change their habits for Friday night football is going to work. And it's just an experiment at this point. You don't have to continue on with it. But right now, it just seems unnecessary.
I'm with you. I don't love it, even if it's just once every 3 years. But I will say for the Pac-12, I think the reason they do that is they fall prey to the East Coast bias. And people always say, oh, those games are too late. Okay, so they want to try to get it prime time on Thursday or Friday.
So you throw it on at 7. But it's still 9 o'clock on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're getting home from your kid's game. Fine. So you'll turn it on.
Yeah.
That's fine. Those were the two teams. That's a brilliant point. That's a great point that, all right, those two teams, that matchup. But for the most part, Michigan's already told you to screw off. We're not doing a Friday night. Ohio State says we'll do one. And there's going to be a race to find other sick notes to present the commissioner as to why. Well, we just can't do it. Penn State's not going to do it.
Mm-mm.
I mean, it's already hell to travel there. In Nebraska, if they get stuck on a Friday night, September. I mean, think about this. South Alabama, is that on the schedule next year? I think I saw that. You want to play that on a Friday night? I mean, Nebraska and all the folks that support the third largest city, you're not going to deal with a Friday night. And if you're Nebraska, you shouldn't have to jack with your road schedule. Going to the Illini, going to Purdue next year on a Friday. Nebraska still hasn't had their schedule out or if they're included on Fridays.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
I love Jerry DiNardo. I almost went to work for him one time. We had a nice Italian dinner at a nice Italian restaurant in Bloomington.
We welcome in the coach, Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. Coach, how are we doing?
We're doing great.
All right. Now, there's a lot to talk about, Nebraska, Ohio State. But, Coach, what's your reaction to the Big Ten Friday night games beginning 2017? I hate the idea. I don't make the rules, though. What do you think?
Well, I just think it's a result of negotiations that'll pay each Big Ten school $40 million instead of $26 million starting in 2017. You know, I mean, that's revenue stream. It seems like they're trying to do a good job of keeping it in moderation as far as how many times one school participate. I think it's inevitable. You know, it's no different than all the other changes that we've had generation after generation. Football funds most sports on most campuses, gives thousands of male and female student athletes a chance to be the best, have the best, eat the best medical care. And I think it's all about dollars and cents, Chris. And so it's not a perfect world.
Coach, great explanation. The money facet is certainly key here. But from a showcase standpoint, do you think it'll help? Do you think it'll get viewers? I'm asking you to play the, you know, answer an impossible question to predict it, but do you think it'll work? Will people shift their habits on Friday night to watch Big Ten football?
If the game's good enough, you know, I mean, Michigan State has done this the last 4 or 5 years, and I think Minnesota's done Thursday night games. I think it depends who you're playing. Will it keep a family away from their son or daughter's sporting event on Friday night? No, and it shouldn't. But, you know, it's about choices, isn't it, Chris? Mm-hmm. I mean, tell me what my choices are. If choices are to go see my son or daughter play, you could put any game on. You could put a Super Bowl on. I'm going to see my son or daughter play.
Right.
So you're not going to impact me. But if it's someone who's home and they were planning on going out to dinner and a movie, but there's a great game on Friday night, you can go to a movie another night. They're going to stay and watch the game. If it's a bad game, probably not. If I'm a fan of a school, a Big Ten school, who's playing a non-conference game, and it's early in the season and they're favored by 35, I'm probably going to still stay home and watch it, right? I haven't seen the team yet. You know, it's a new season. I don't care that they're playing Team X and they're going to win by 50. Why wouldn't I watch them on Friday night? So, you know, I think it's priorities, right? What are my other choices when someone says that you're going to stay home and watch a football game Friday night? You know,
if
I was going to go to the ballet, I might go to the ballet anyway. You know, it just depends what my choices are.
Oh, I mean, it's an easy choice. Ballet with the wife or football on Friday. I'm watching football, except you got to keep mama happy.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's probably a bad example because, honestly, the ballet probably would win.
Yeah, yeah, right, depending. You did a great job on BTN Live, you and Mr. Pizzo, and you were answering Twitter reaction to Nebraska and Wisconsin. Coach calls it, I think, was the segment regarding Jordan Westerkamp and the non-pass interference call. Coach, if folks somehow missed your explanation, you did quite a bit of research on getting an answer, didn't you, as to why no flag was thrown?
Well, of course, yeah, I mean, you know, most of the reaction I've had, obviously, is negative. You know,
right.
Like, why did it take you 2 days? Well, I can tell you what, I was driving home from Champaign, and I didn't know if the final drive was going to cover it. If the final drive covered it, then I wasn't going to. And anyway, so it took me 2 days. And the other reason about 2 days, Bill Carollo would not talk to me until he felt sure that Mike Riley, he had an obligation to talk to Mike Riley before he had an obligation to talk to me.
Right.
So he wasn't always available to me until he felt if Mike Riley wanted to talk about it, he was going to talk to Mike Riley about it before he was going to talk to a member of the media about it. So we do this coach call every week. And people say, hey, break down this play or break down that. We've done some things on Penn State and so on and so forth. When I watched the game, I thought it was pass interference. I wanted to research it. You know what? And if people still think it's pass interference, so be it. You know, but to me, Chris, the discussion and the reaction that we've had on Twitter is what this is all about. People are watching our shows. People are interested in this. I have competed against Nebraska 10 times, once as a player. I have the most respect for this group. We finally beat him at Colorado. We got a standing ovation on the way off the field in Lincoln after finally beating them. I mean, it's classy, classy, classy. So, but I can't convince anybody of that. But I do have an opinion, you know, and I had an opinion about what their season was going to be like. I was wrong about that. I have an opinion about this call. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but I have an opinion, and I'm not shy about sharing it, as you may know.
No, absolutely not. And like TJ and I were talking, and Jay too, on Monday about the pass interference call. Short of blood, right? You're not going to get a call like that in that situation on the road. It just doesn't happen in sports. You got to overcome it. Is my point.
Well, yeah, and the issue is, why was the contact caused? And I can see people saying, well, Jordan was slowing down because Watt was there and all that. You know, I get both sides of the argument. But then when people are saying to me, what about all the holding calls? Well, my God. I mean, I could go through this coach's tape. The game would take 5 hours, you know, if we were calling every holding and reviewing every holding. So, you know, people can take it to a little bit of an extreme. It absolutely was a judgment call, and there's always going to be arguments before and after a judgment call.
So the Huskers now travel to Columbus on Saturday to take on the Ohio State Buckeyes. Jerry, what have you seen on the film from the Buckeyes the last four games compared to the first four games where they were just destroying everybody? Why have they seemed to have lost that a bit here the last 4 weeks?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the Ohio State fans want to ask what happened to the team that played Oklahoma, right? They look like a point a minute, and what's happened, TJ, is and we've talked about this a lot as it relates to Nebraska. When you line up in the spread formation, you have three choices, right? You can run the tailback, you can throw the ball, and you can run the option. You can't do all three of those things really well, so you have to pick two of them, I think. And so it looks like they're trying to run Mike Weber downhill in the A and the B gaps and have like an I formation presence. And it also looks like they want to throw the ball. They don't want to run JT very much. And I think that's the crux of the problem. One of the things they've chosen, and the second one being the pass game, they're not very good at right now. And they're being very cautious with JT not to get him hurt. And so they're just not hitting on all cylinders. I mean, at times their offensive line looked really good against Northwestern, but they're just struggling in the pass game. And if you take the pass game away from a spread team that it's only running the tailback and not running the quarterback, even Ohio State has problems moving the ball. So against Oklahoma, they were throwing the ball well. They're not throwing it well right now.
Thing I've noticed too, Coach DiNardo with us here on Hail Varsity Radio, is what Penn State's front was able to do without blitzing, what Wisconsin's front was able to do, and, you know, wherever that fourth man's coming from, it really disrupted what they wanted to do in the passing game. In reference to Nebraska, way different quarterback they're facing this Saturday. Can Nebraska's front be effective Saturday night against Barrett?
I think they can. You know, I think I tweeted it today or yesterday. I've lost track, but you know, one of the most impressive things about Nebraska against Wisconsin is they got four-man pressure. And Chris, they got four-man pressure on play action, and the reason that's significant is the play action pass begins to look like the run, right? That's mm-hmm. why they call it play action. So a defensive lineman on a play action pass first has to diagnose that it isn't a run, but it is a pass, and then get into their rush lane. So I think John Perella has done an unbelievable job teaching these guys to go from what looks like a run block, but it's really a pass block. It's not on third and long, you know, we all know it's most likely going to be pass. The offensive lineman is going to sit back. There's no secret. On first and 10, when the offensive lineman fire out at the defensive lineman, but it's a pass, That takes a lot of coaching to get that defensive lineman all of a sudden into a pass rush mentality, and that's what was most impressive. So, what can they do to answer your question against Ohio State? If Ohio State's run game is not going and they rely on the pass, I think that's probably part of the secret to Nebraska's success this weekend.
Jerry DiNardo, a couple more minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, when you look at this Nebraska matchup, how do you think they respond Saturday night? Tough loss, overtime loss. Now they get to go to Columbus. How does the team respond mentally?
Well, you hope they respond like the college football playoff rankings responded, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean that's a sign that they've got a lot of respect nationally. Mm-hmm. That people think this is a really good team. You know, they played a team that's ranked, what, two spots ahead of them? I mean, Wisconsin's got two losses, and they're in the top 10. I mean, mm-hmm. this is new ground for the Big Ten. I know there's talk when Nebraska was in the Big 12 and so on and so forth. Now Nebraska is in a conference when they could just come off a big-time tough loss and still be in the top 10 of the college football playoffs. I mean, that's pretty impressive. Am I right?
No, you're absolutely right. And
so that's what. My point is, if the kids have the same attitude as those people in the room, you know, they should be responding like they can't wait to play Ohio State. They're ranked what, three or four spots below them? Is that mm-hmm.
that's
Ohio
where it's
State
at?
Six, right?
Nebraska came in at 10. Yeah,
right. I mean, let's go. You know, we can't wait to get to Columbus. We're on a national stage. We're on a national stage. Last week we lost, but we're still in a national championship hunt. You know, they're so far ahead of everybody in the Western Division. I mean, they beat Ohio State. I find it hard to believe they're not going to Indianapolis.
Coach, I have about 30 seconds. Sports Light with Mike Hall. Do you make an appearance? Is that what I'm hearing?
I did. And, geez, I'm really nervous about it. I don't know what to say. I'm speechless. I mean, Hall's crazy. I mean, this whole thing is just... He's out of his mind. I mean, he showed me what we were going to do. I said, really?
Uh-oh.
But I'm full speed. I love my call, so I'm, you know, I just worry about this show. But
good enough. Well, we'll have to tune in for it. Coach, thanks so much. We'll catch up again. Appreciate your thoughts.
All right. See you guys.
Take care. There he is, Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network. At Jerry DiNardo. Good stuff from Coach. And great point on Coach Perella. And if Nebraska responds like you think they will, should be dynamite Saturday.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, You are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
All right, it is time. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Amazing membership benefits, membership pricing. Still going to be good this weekend. Another ninth game opportunity. You can golf in November. And if, say you can't get out, they've got heated hitting bays. The membership benefits are incredible. And get in there and find out. So when spring gets here and it's awesome every day outside, you can be a part of Wilderness Ridge. Go see your friends. Director of Golf, Chris Thompson. Mike Schuhart, Director of Instruction. Shuey is with us for the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Shuey, you fired up. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How can you not be? It's November, man. It's like
November
spring
and there's
out.
No snow.
I know. It's beautiful out.
Said the S word. I apologize. Okay, we will get into some new products for the avid golfer and also get your thoughts on some Major League Baseball. But hypothetically speaking, say a flag football game between the Nebraska women and the Ohio State women, golf,
oh my,
is scheduled. I need to know who wins.
Oh, Nebraska all the way.
Nebraska.
We got an injured player, though, so we need her.
Do tell.
Need her to be healthy.
Okay.
So our freshman last year had a great year last year. She hurt her hand this year, so she's been on the sidelines all year. So it looks like she's going to have to redshirt.
Okay.
She's getting better, so if she came back 100% healthy, oh, yeah, because she's really good. I mean, she was an all-state basketball player, volleyball player.
So you've got the mismatch, you're telling me.
I think so.
Or would you put her at quarterback?
Oh, I'd put her at quarterback.
Okay.
Yeah.
That talented?
Yeah, she's a gamer, too.
Okay.
So
there we go.
I want the ball in her hand.
There we go. So there you have it. If you were wondering if Ohio State and Nebraska, the women's golf team, were to play a flag football game, who would get it done? It's the Nebraska women. This time of year, holidays are around the corner, and maybe the clubs are up for good just because it is into November, heaven forbid. It's time to look at new ways equipment can make you be a better golfer. What are some different products out there? What are some new items, Shuey, that you know golfers can check out?
Yeah, this is a pretty fun time of the year, actually, because, again, a lot of the companies that if they're going to introduce new product, they start to throw stuff out there this time of the year, and you'll see after the first of the year that product will be available. So it's a fun time, you know, if you are in the market for anything, new driver, new irons, new wedges, you'll start to see a lot of companies start to put their product out there. You know, Titleist has a brand new driver coming out. Wilson, for example, if you watch the Golf Channel at all, they're doing driver versus driver, and they're down to the final three of what is that driver that will be introduced. So it's like it's pretty cool.
Go a little bit more into if you do make equipment change, and like just from a personal standpoint, I bought a set of clubs probably 10 years ago, and I'm not the best golfer nor the most avid, but I have a good time when I go, and I'll go a couple times a month, you know, a month, barring baseball with Junior. So I get out and have a good time with it, but I'm not in search of improving my score. I'm defeatist. I'm like Cub fan or Indian fan right now. Something bad's going to happen. So I don't invest. But say you really do get some lessons,
uh-huh,
and then you want to up your game equipment-wise. I mean, how big a factor, truthfully, is maybe making the switch versus a player's ability? How much can equipment really help your game?
Yeah, it can help a lot. I mean, it obviously depends on what
skill
your equipment is and your skill level a little bit. But the technology is amazing, what has come along in the last few years. So, I mean, if your equipment is, you know, 10, 15 years old, I mean, the technology has advanced quite a bit since then. So it definitely can help you, no question. I mean, the equipment is an important part. And obviously, you need to have a little bit of a skill set.
For Schmidt. You can't suck at golf and expect to be better with new sticks.
Yeah, you can't quite buy that game yet.
No, I can't.
You still got to have a little talent to get it done.
you can just shut your eyes and see my swing, and there you go. From a specific advancement in technology, what are a couple of things the last maybe 6 months to a year that's impressed you, that you've maybe used and has helped you coach and helped you teach?
Oh, like driver technology. A company like Callaway has invested Boeing, for example, you know, and they've done some aerodynamic designs
Pretty good at it.
They're pretty good at it, you know. So they've incorporated that into their design of a driver, and it's like what you'll see with the coming out of this driver versus driver with Wilson. I mean, some of the incredible technology terms that are used and how it affects a driver and how it moves through the golf ball. You know, decreasing drag on a driver by 30-some% to help increase club head speed, which helps increase
distance.
You know, distance. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the thing. And technology is amazing, what it's doing and how they implement that technology to help a player hit it farther.
You've always been a guy that's been good on the green, and you had your own you designed your own putter. And now when it came to doing that, I mean, tell me about your input with Shewhart's putter. And also, what are some of the newer models, how they can help? Obviously, it's mental. You got to be steady and confident and all that good stuff. But let's talk, because, I mean, when Jay Moore's here, he's like, yeah, putter's fault, right?
Well, you always have to blame the equipment, man.
Thank you.
Can't ever blame yourself.
That is right.
Because it's always the equipment's fault. It's like, man, something's wrong with that. No, but, you know, when I look at and I talk to people about equipment, you know, there's three things I really want them to look at that's super important. One is it has to look good to you.
Mm-hmm.
One, it has to feel good
look
to
good,
you.
Look good, play good type thing.
It has to feel good when you hit it.
Okay.
And the third, which is most important, it has to produce. It has to produce. I mean, if I'm looking to hit this driver farther than the one I have, you know, it can look good, it can feel good, but if it goes the same distance, it's like goes the same distance. So it needs to outperform what it is that you have. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to putters, I mean, putting is such an optical thing. So that's a lot of what you're looking at in a putter is that it's one of the first and most common causes for poor putting is misalignment. So you see putters that help a player visually be able to actually line up. Man, is the putter actually lined up where I think it's going to go? You know, because we're pretty smart sometimes. It's like, I think I'm going there, but my putter's aimed quite a bit off of what that is, and we'll make a compensation to actually make it kind of try to go where it is that we can go. So it's kind of like two wrongs trying to make a right. That doesn't usually work.
Nope, not at all.
Very well.
Shuey, Wilderness Ridge Golf, folks can pop by there, see you, and see the great amenities, check out the 27 holes, but also they can come see you in the wintertime when it comes to just working on that swing, can't they?
You can. You can come anytime, man. It's all year round.
All year, it's heated. It's comfortable.
Kind of.
Yeah?
Yeah. It gets a little chilly when it gets a little 10 below zero outside.
Oh, I understand that. That's when you're watching Nebraska replays.
That's exactly right.
Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, Mike Shewhart with us. And find out more. Membership pricing and benefits with Wilderness Ridge Golf. WildernessRidgeGolf.com. 402-434-5106. Shuey, we'll catch up soon, bud.
All right, thanks
appreciate
for having
it.
Me.
Good to talk to you. Brad Edwards on the way with Hail Varsity. Also, a Jock Doc coming up. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to hailvarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
One final time, hour one, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. Safe driving demands your full attention. One of every three traffic fatalities in Nebraska, alcohol-related. Many of those drivers involved buzzed while driving. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Office of Highway Safety. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Mike Shewhart hanging out. Shewie, I'm going to give you a couple minutes and a quick reaction. One, those Norris Titans moving on. They beat somebody from up north last week.
We took down Jay's Elkhorn team, man. So they're on to Omaha Scutt now Friday.
Yeah, Scutt's good, but I tell you what, the Titans are tremendous, and there's two Norris folks here between TJ and Shuey. So We're going to talk a little Titan football. And I got to ask you, too, do you have a lean in the World Series tonight? Did you grow up a Cubs or Tribe fan?
No, not either one. But, I mean, I like Cleveland a lot. It's tough to beat the home team.
Yeah.
You know, I like to see the Cubbies win. But both teams, I mean, they're both, man, they haven't been there for a long time trying to win. It's a great story. I'm glad it went to Game 7. So I like Cleveland.
It's brought baseball back. People have watched it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm watching more baseball because Junior's playing baseball. But from sitting down and watching a game, it's hard for me to do. Used to love it. I loved going to games, and for sure was huge listening to it on the radio growing up.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, I can get into it. And TJ, like, kind of just blinks and glazes over about just the speed of the game. But I've changed just because of watching youth baseball. I can watch, I guess, any baseball now. A little bit. That's where I'm at. So I'll be sure and be tuned in tonight with it.
Cubbies are a great story, though, man. Everybody wants the Cubbies to win.
Yeah.
Are they
wearing you out, though?
Not quite. I know my wife's not a baseball fan, but she's rooting for the Cubbies,
so she's
watching.
Okay, so she's jumped on the Cubs wagon.
Exactly.
Just because of the story.
Exactly.
Okay.
Those feel-good things.
Now, what I'd love to hear, and they've kind of brought out everybody when it was in Wrigley. I mean, you had Andre Dawson in the stands. Love the Hawk. You know, I'd love Sandberg's thoughts, because those are the two guys that were the Cubs to me. My dad's era and generation, you know, was Ernie Banks.
Yeah.
And, you know, being a big Mark Grace guy growing up, I'd love to get his thoughts. I know he won a title with the Diamondbacks, but he was, he led the 90s in hits, for God's sake. I mean, he was a great player. A lot of fond memories of those Cub teams that just couldn't get it done. And I wonder how Chicago fan is we're now what? hour and a half away from pregame. First pitch at 7. You'll hear it here on ESPN and many of our Hail Varsity affiliates. So it'll be great. I think both teams will be locked in and ready to go. It's their fan bases that I worry about. Number of arrests tonight in Cleveland, number of arrests tonight in Chicago, say they do this thing.
Oh, man.
Setting the over-under at 48.
I'm going over.
You're going way over?
Way over that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I set the number too low. That's my fault. 48's a brutal call. 117.
That's getting closer.
Okay.
You're going to have a lot of depressed people and then some happy people. So yeah. You got to go both ways.
You got to go both ways on that one. Shuey, good to see you, brother. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man.
Brent Edwards is coming up. ESPN Insider College Game Day, College Football Playoff, Nebraska Thoughts next.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Hey, by day!
Hey, by day!
We get better blessed!
We get better blessed!
We get big beat!
We get big beat!
Boom! Beat! Beat!
Boom! Beat!
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
In hour two, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, efforting Brad Edwards, College Football Insider Game Day, College Football Playoff Rankings out. Good for the Big Ten. High five. And a fist pound when you have Michigan in. You have Nebraska 10th, Penn State 12th. That was surprising, but you'll take it if your mindset is to cheer for the entire conference. And then Ohio State's where Ohio State's at. A lot to get to. Game 7 tonight, Cubs and Tribe. Thoughts on that? And the best way to... It's gonna make someone weep uncontrollably here by 10:30 tonight or 11. One fan base that will continue suffering will likely be inconsolable. But what's the best way to console a Cub or Tribe fan tonight? I'm thinking about so many Cub fans out there. Again, as we reference Gus, former co-host of the show, Cub fan forever. Probably has Wrigleyville tattooed on his back. Unsure. How's he going to handle it if they don't take care of it tonight? Mike Schaefer, dear friend. Longtime Cleveland Indian fan. How's he going to handle and react? These are questions we need answers for. You can't just look them in the eye and say, wait till next year. They've been hearing that their whole lives. College football, Nebraska. The Big Ten Friday night idea. And Coach DiNardo's like, well, do the math. And again, some of us struggle to do said math. The new TV deal's $40-plus million. It's part of the negotiating thing. Listen, was this a move to help promote those programs that are just awful and down on their luck? Is Friday night the new 11 a.m. kickoff? Kind of feels like it to me. And everybody's on TV now. So there's no uniqueness to it. It's just a matter of whether or not anyone's going to watch you. And how in Lord's name are you going to convince anybody to watch an Illinois-Purdue game on Friday night? It's a fair question. Well, we'll see if we can't get Brad Edwards here next segment or later this segment. John is with us on Hail Varsity Radio. We'll get into Ohio State and Nebraska thoughts in a moment. John, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, I'm 70, and I went to Lincoln High. And I enjoy, my brother and I enjoy going to Lincoln High games, and we've gone since we both graduated. And I enjoy Lincoln High games, even though they've had a bad record for the number of years, more than I do Nebraska game. And I'm a heavy-duty Nebraska fan. And my grandson's now playing for Lincoln High, a defensive back. And there's just no choice. I am locked into Friday Night Lights.
Mm-hmm.
And even if Nebraska was playing on Friday night, I'd be at the Lincoln High game. I'm just saying that's okay. Just where, you know, where I'm at.
That's what you're used to. That's what you do. John, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. And listen, yeah, you're not going to pick Nebraska. I mean, some of you'd love to. But you're not going to pick Nebraska over your family. I mean, you're just not going to do it. And this is listen, Nebraska's not going to be on Friday nights a lot. I don't know if Nebraska's in position right now to just flat out say, you know, take a walk in traffic, commish, like Michigan and Penn State have. They have refused to do it or host it. And Nebraska has enough clout to just kind of pick their schedule. Ohio State said, yeah, we'll play ball, but it's within certain restrictive timeframes and ideas. That's kind of where Ohio State's at. So Nebraska's not in any danger of having to host one of these, I don't believe. TJ's scanning the latest updates now, and Nebraska's not released anything. You do what the money tells you to do, but you make the less important programs do it, I guess. It's a way to pay back. Do you have something for us?
Well, I just have that the Nebraska Coaches on Twitter Association, they tweeted out, disappointed to hear of Big Ten plans to play more football games on Friday nights starting in 2017. Just say no, Husker Football Nation. Yeah. Hashtag Fridays are for high school football.
There we go. Well done, Nebraska Football High School Association. Yeah, you can make it stop. The other part of it is don't be bad. Don't be 3-9. Don't get turned out over to the new Saturday morning, 11 a.m. How many times Nebraska fans the last few years screamed about the 11 a.m. kickoffs? It was awful. It's brutal. But you weren't winning enough to say much different. You have some control now. You're 10th in the country. Sweet. Keep winning. Big opportunity Saturday night. So we'll try and run Brad Edwards down. See where Brad's at. Might be soccer. Or now soccer's done. I'm not sure where Brad is. So we'll figure that out here. Good stuff from Coach Banker on what he's facing with JT Barrett. Some incredible stuff with Nebraska's defense. That's one thing to really look at. Nebraska's been extremely impressive on the defensive side. I don't know if you have shifted, but I have. completely to kind of buying into Nebraska's defense being able to be one of those that can carry the water the rest of the season and be a difference maker for Nebraska. You hope the offense gets better, but you know the defense is something that has been there and will continue to be there. This text comes in. Can text us here at Hail Varsity, 88474. Friday night games, horrible. And it's horrible for recruiting for all Big Ten schools. That's the biggest point here to be made. Urban on the road Friday nights or at an area high school game. If you're on the line, we'll get to you here in a minute. Also, Penn State loves to recruit and recruit and recruit and recruit. Nebraska, their coaches are on the road. It's not just bye weeks. They're hitting the road, especially when those windows are open. There's so much negative about this. Now, hopefully, the ones that aren't, and I hate to say this word, the non-important programs are the guinea pigs for this Pepsi challenge. That's how you got to spin it. Because your other halves are saying, no, we're not doing it. Brian's on the line. Welcome into Hail Varsity, Brian. Thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Hey, I agree with you totally. I mean, what are we doing this for? Like you said, it screws up the recruiting. If the college teams have a bye or something, you know, they go out to the local schools to see some of the, you know, local talent. You know, it's just, it's like the NFL. They play on Thursday nights now. Why do we have to play every night of the week? You know, they started doing this when the colleges started playing on Thursday here a few years ago. You're just, you know, stick with one day or maybe two. I mean, you know, I understand NFL plays on Sunday and then they play a Monday night game, but you know, colleges, stick with Saturday. I mean, it's just, it's stupid. I mean, anymore, they play Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, you know, now Fridays.
And who does that? And Brian, thanks for the call. Who's playing Tuesday or Wednesday nights? It's the Mac. Why? Because it's the only time Mac can get on TV and they need attention. Does the Big Ten need that much attention? No, it's just a way to... Here's what I wonder. Who said yes to this negotiating point? Fine, we'll pay you $40-some million dollars per school, but we're going to stick you on Friday night. Sure. Who has control and say with the scheduling? Clearly, Fox and ESPN aren't going to be getting Michigan or Penn State on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And Ohio State selectively. I need the research. How many eyeballs watched? Maybe you can Google this, TJ. My wireless is absent in here. How many people watched the Stanford-Washington game? That's the one good Friday night game. The Pac-12 also throws their championship game on a Friday. Pac-12 title game has been on Friday nights. Why? Because everybody else's championship game, that triple header set up between the, I can't say Big 12 anymore, but you have the Big 10, you have the SEC in the afternoon, and then you have the ACC. You have all of those. But I just wonder, the one marquee matchup I've ever seen or heard of on a Friday night was Washington and Stanford this year. And occasionally, we'll talk to Barnett about this tomorrow because he's had to do a Friday night game this year. I think it was the Pac-12's done it. Why is the Pac-12 doing it? It was told to them by their contract deal with Fox, first of all. And out west, it's nice all the time. Brad Edwards has checked in. We will see if we can't move him to next segment, which is good. 466-377-6800, 825-5865. Friday night football in the Big Ten. I got to ask you, are you going to watch?
So the Stanford-Washington game drew a 2.4 rating, the best regular season Friday night game on ESPN since 2012.
Okay. And we don't know who played in 2012, do we?
It's not saying it, sadly.
No. I'm going to put money down that it might have been Bowling Green versus Northern Illinois.
It might have been. Look, I'm a fan of college football, so I don't mind that there are other days when college football is being played. But
it's not going to be appointment television for you.
Yeah, but it's definitely not appointment. And I wonder if it's going to suffer from oversaturation a little bit, how I think the NFL is kind of struggling now with their TV ratings.
Well, the NFL came in and kind of said, oh, nice job, college football, with your Thursday nights.
Yep.
Before, it had been just late November, a few NFL games. Now they're every Thursday. Mm-hmm. So you're splitting hairs there. And usually the ACC owned Thursday nights.
Yep.
You'd see Miami, Virginia Tech, or you'd see Virginia Tech owned Thursday night. It was good for a while. But now, not so much. Don't care. It's not – I guess the one Thursday night game I'm looking forward to, was going to be Louisville-Houston. Houston's mm-hmm. kind of taken a crap, so it doesn't matter to me anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, Thursday nights, yeah, I'll check it out. But you got the NBA going now. TNT's done a great job with their Thursday night setups.
And I agree this whole thing is just kind of stupid and I don't care for it. But, again, it's just once every 3 years. I just think we need to calm down a little bit, even though I don't like it.
No,
but
right.
I just,
the overreaction. But the fact is that they've said, sure, we're willing to try this. Now, maybe in 2 years from now, the Big Ten will have an amazing showcase and ratings breakthroughs, and it'll catch on. I just don't see it.
Yeah.
Because if I'm not doing it, you know how much I love sports. If I'm not doing something, I'm not going to stay home and probably watch sports. I'm going to go find something to do with family. And if it's a big game, if it's a seventh game Friday night, then there's an exception. A seventh game in the postseason for a championship. That's the only way I'm kind of breaking habit. It's drag the wife and kid out to dinner. That's what I'll do. But for the most part, I'm not watching football. I'm just not going to on a Friday night. Okay, Nebraska, Ohio State. Took some questions in the back room from non-sports people. Like, what do you think about Saturday night? One question, any of the broken dudes going to play? And it's like, okay, from broken dudes.
Broken dudes.
The question is answered this way. Nebraska's injury situation, and there'll be a practice report coming up in about 30 minutes off of Hale Varsity and Jacob Padilla. But right now, you know Neville didn't play or practice yesterday. You know Farmer's out. You know Seathan's going to give it a try. And you have this option and opportunity here to really use Seathan Carter. That's the biggest question I have injury-wise for Nebraska is, yeah, Seathan's going to play. How much can you get out of him? Can he be effective? Can he be more than a decoy and more than a third-down receiver? Can he be an effective blocker in the run game? Let's get to Scott on line one on Hale Varsity Radio. Scott, thanks for hanging on. Go ahead.
Blocker.
Scott, you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead, bud. Turn your radio down for me,
pal. Not a problem at all. Hey, how's it? Can you hear me?
Gotcha, go.
Turn your radio down for me. Yeah, I was just going to comment about the Friday night football schedule coming up here, but I think it's just a way for BTN to try to increase some ratings because obviously Friday night's not doing anything for them.
Well, and the games are Fox and ESPN. Those are the ones putting the games on. I mean, BTN may or may not air some. I mean, what'd they do? Michigan State opened the year up on a Friday night. Scott, thanks for the call. Yeah, maybe this is an answer for ESPN. Let's take care of programming with the game. But I can't – they got to answer to advertisers. Mm-hmm. They got to have eyeballs. And I think it's going to be a colossal waste of resources, talent – and I'm not investing in it if I'm an advertiser and it's a Friday night college football game. It's a hard enough sell if it's Illinois versus, you know, roast beef state. And the Illini are dogged. They're underdogged. It is. And if you put two big teams together, then that's a real confidence issue. We think so little of you that you're playing on Friday night. Whatever. Money talks. There's some things I wouldn't do for money, though. Not many, but some. And one of which is playing Friday nights. All right, I'll shut up. Sorry, I whined for 15 minutes there on it, and it probably won't affect Nebraska. You pray it won't affect Nebraska, but your reaction's priceless. What the hell? Okay, Brad Edwards. We'll talk some college football next.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message.
Chat with us on Twitter at Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Jay will be back in tomorrow. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, thanks so much for your passion and thoughts on the Big Ten's idea about playing on Friday nights. Welcome in Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider College Game Day. Brad, how are we doing? How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm sorry I wasn't available at the scheduled time. I was talking to the gymnastics coach here at gymnastics practice and got too far away from my phone. Didn't hear it vibrating.
No, that's fine. So. How's your floor exercise? Is it good?
Mine is not good. Fortunately, my daughter's is much better.
That's impressive. There we go. That's my floor exercise is non-existent. We'll get into some thoughts on the weekend. Brad, want to get your take, though, on as a guy who is in tune with the college football playoff and just the Big Ten in general and the nation of college football. What's your thoughts on the number of Big Ten teams in this first reveal last night? Nebraska comes in at 10. You know where Michigan and Ohio State and Wisconsin are at. And then Penn State making it up to 12. What's your take on the committee's initial thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I've had an issue for the last few weeks as I've been filling out my top 25 every Sunday. I get to seven after seven, and you're kind of like, you know, beating your head against the wall because you're ranking a bunch of teams in places where you don't think they really belong. But the truth is that there's just a big drop off after the top seven and you don't know where else to go. And I think what happened with the selection committee is that they ran into that same problem, and kind of their default mechanism was they went to the two conferences that have been the strongest, which are the Big Ten and the SEC. And they kind of gave those teams benefit of doubt. And I think that's why, you know, teams like Nebraska and Penn State, I would say, you know, Auburn, LSU, Florida for sure. Florida is definitely one that maybe their profile in terms of who they've actually beaten doesn't seem to match what their ranking is at this stage of the season. But the truth is there aren't that many teams out there that have, you know, more than one significant victory at this stage. So, I think that some of those teams were rewarded for being in a conference that's been really good. And, you know, they might not have beaten ranked teams, but they've had to beat some decent teams in order to get to this point with no more than one or two losses.
Now, I think I saw in a video somewhere, was it half an hour before the rankings came out, that you predicted that A&M would be ahead of Washington in the first rankings that came out?
Yeah, it was actually the day before.
Okay.
I might have said it on a show prior to that, but what it was is Monday I was looking at some of our updated numbers, and I was looking at schedule strength, not only the way we do it at ESPN, but the way that the committee does it. Now, they don't have a specific schedule strength ranking that they go off of, but they do have some numbers that are provided to them. And the old, I guess it's not necessarily defunct, but the RPI that they use for basketball is a very similar type formula that they use as kind of a reference point for football. And I was looking at where Washington's schedule ranked in that, and they're about 70 spots behind Texas A&M in schedule strength. And when I saw that, it just kind of occurred to me that, like, you know, even though they just had a big win at Utah, the committee is not going to reward a team with a schedule that weak by putting them up in the top four until they've at least beaten a second good team. And I think that's kind of where we are with Washington right now. Look, for the last 2 years, they've been very critical of Baylor and its non-conference schedule, and it would be hypocritical to not apply the same thing to Washington, which has played arguably the weakest non-conference schedule in all of college football. And then on top of that, they were unfortunate that, you know, some of their early season conference games turned out to not really mean that much because teams like Stanford and Oregon are not what they used to be.
Brad Edwards with us, College Game Day ESPN Insider at JBradEdwards on Twitter. Now, Brad, your reaction to Nebraska's almost win at Wisconsin, got out of there in overtime, Badgers did, and they are on Nebraska's heels for the Big Ten West. Nebraska heads to Columbus this Saturday night, prime time, which sounds really cool to say. Nebraska, another chance here. How do you feel about Nebraska after Saturday, and what do you think about them this Saturday?
Yeah, I don't think I'm alone in the group of people who were more impressed with what Nebraska did in that loss than we were in any of the games they had won prior to that. I think that Wisconsin was the first team they had played that we really felt like we knew what the opponent was, and especially for them on the road in that environment to come back from double digits down the second half, force overtime, and obviously it was not a game in which they were outplayed and just managed to, you know, kind of somehow find a way to get to overtime. They played, you know, toe-to-toe with them the whole way, and it was one test that was passed. I think when you look at just kind of, you know, the type of physical team that Nebraska is, that Wisconsin is, Nebraska showed that they can match up with that. I think that the test coming up this weekend with Ohio State, which is obviously a physical team in its own right, but Ohio State is more, your battle facing them is more their skill. Their athleticism at almost every position. And now it's time for Nebraska to see how they measure up to a team like that. And look, the good thing for Nebraska is that at least in the division, Wisconsin's not out of the woods yet. I think that Northwestern game for them this week is very losable. And if Wisconsin were to lose, if Nebraska is competitive with Ohio State, even with another loss, if they end up 10-2 and win the division with close losses on the road against Wisconsin and Ohio State, I don't think they need to apologize to anybody for backing into a championship game, because if they can play Ohio State tough, I think they've shown that they belong there.
What's your read on Ohio State? I mean, a lot of talk has been about the downfield passing game, and it's not loosening up the run game, and they don't want to run Barrett a ton. I mean, that's the storylines we've hit on this week.
Yeah. But
with Ohio State, is it a confidence issue because they have so many young guys, or are they just not as developed / talented right now in this journey, so to speak, through their 2016 season? Why are they a mess, and do they stay a mess, or do you think they snap out of it?
Well, yeah, I think that it probably starts with the offensive line. I mean, they have two veterans on that line, but the other three guys are kind of a work in progress, and I don't think their offensive line is gelled the way that Urban hoped it would have by this stage, and probably not the way that it gelled 2 years ago over the course of the season, and that's caused other problems. I mean, we did talk last week about their downfield passing game, and part of that was pass protection, part of it's on Barrett, part of it's on, you know, young receivers that maybe aren't where they're supposed to be or aren't able to get enough separation. But now they're starting to struggle a little bit running the ball, which was something they did really well early in the season. And then on top of all of that, their defense, which overall has been really good over the last four games, has started to allow more big plays through the air. I mean, they're still getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback, and they're not allowing a very high completion percentage, but they are allowing more, more completions of like 20 plus yards. And that's, you know, when your offense is struggling, that's tough, because usually a play that big against your defense is going to result in points of some sort on a drive. And so the offense has just played at a level where Ohio State's defense is needed to basically be perfect, and they haven't been able to.
So the other big game this weekend is Alabama LSU, the same time actually as Nebraska Ohio State. How do you see this one playing out? Do you think Coach Ed can keep it rolling for the Tigers?
Yeah, you know, this is really a tough one to figure out, because there's so much optimism at LSU right now. There's so much talk about, you know, all the things that they've changed. And while I would agree that if Les Miles were still the head coach, they would not have won these last three games by as many points as they've won them by. I think they would have been more conservative on offense. They, you know, it wouldn't have looked as pretty, but still at the end of the day, they have run up big yardage totals, mostly on the ground, against teams with really bad rushing defenses. And now they've got to face the team with the best rushing defense in college football. And look, you can say whatever you want about how Danny Etling has helped them by just, you know, completing the easy throws. He's not doing anything spectacular. But Danny Etling's not going to beat Alabama. In order for them to have a chance to win this game, they're going to have to be able to run the ball, and I'm just not sure that they can. They couldn't do it last year against Alabama. If they can't, and they're not able to generate a lot of points, they have to hope that Alabama's freshman quarterback Jalen Hurts just continues to misfire on his downfield passes, because that's the one area where he can improve a lot. He misses a lot of open receivers for potential big plays. They still end up making enough big plays as it is in the running game, but that I think is the key for LSU. I think they're going to have to keep this a low scoring game to have a chance. At the end of the day, I think it's just tough to pick a team with Ed Orgeron as the head coach and Danny Etling as the quarterback to beat Alabama. But I do give them a chance to keep it close.
Brad Edwards with us on Hale Varsity Radio. Brad, about 90 seconds or so. Tommy Armstrong didn't have a great game Saturday night, did make some third down plays. What type of performance do you expect from him Saturday?
You know, in some ways, I think this game could be tougher just because of the types of players Ohio State has. I think that he could be under more pressure from the pass rush than he was against Wisconsin. I think the athleticism of their DBs is going to give him a little bit different look. Now, maybe there might be more breakdowns on the defensive end where they might, you know, give up a big play or leave a guy running open that he didn't get against Wisconsin. So I think he's just going to have to keep his composure, not get frustrated. And obviously that's the thing for a quarterback is you just got to forget whatever happened in the last series and move forward. And a defense like this, just like Wisconsin's, is going to force you into some bad plays. But he's got to just avoid making the really bad play that ends up giving Ohio State easy points. And I think for the most part, he did that against Wisconsin. He just needed to make one more big play for his team. We'll see. The way Ohio State's playing, I don't think that this is an impossible game for Nebraska to win.
Brad Edwards with us, college football insider and ESPN game day. At Brad Edwards, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter, and you can read him at ESPN Insider. Brad, we'll run you down next week. Thanks so much for giving us some time today. We appreciate you.
All right, anytime, guys.
Take care. Awesome. There he goes. It's not impossible for Nebraska, but I think the points he hit on with the type of athletes and defense you're going to be facing, it could be a bigger cluster to deal with. But you could hit him. You could punch him a little bit and get some big plays. Jock Doc's on the way.
Welcome back to the Hale Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Back with the Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon, it's another fantasy update. How's the squad?
You know, the squad struggled this week. Still having troubles with the old receivers not showing up every week and being consistent. So it was a tough day on Sunday.
You are preaching to the choir, my friend. Some of us started the Seattle guys, and it didn't work out well. One of the matchups that was intriguing, though, is Arizona-Carolina. And the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu, is injured again. Give us the specifics. What's going on with him? Usually it's knees, not so this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Poor Phillips had some knee issues and trouble in the past. Now it's his shoulder they're dealing with. The information that's kind of floating out there is a shoulder subluxation, which essentially what that is when the ball portion of the shoulder, so shoulder's a ball and socket joint, when the ball portion of the shoulder kind of slips out of place. There's kind of two grades to it. There's a subluxation where it slips a little bit out of place but doesn't completely go out of joint. That's a subluxation. Versus a true dislocation would be when the ball portion completely comes out of place and kind of locks itself in an awkward position, if you will. And so they're calling the honey badgers more of a subluxation event. So kind of a milder version of laxity or looseness of the joint. But that's basically what they're calling. I didn't get a chance to see the video of it, so I'm not sure if anybody had to attempt to put it back into place. Most of the time with the subluxation, it slides back into place on its own without anybody applying pressure. Would be kind of a description of that.
How far is that margin between subluxation and dislocation? You just explained the difference, but from a pressure or force standpoint, how fine's that line to need surgery or treatment when you look at just dislocation versus the subluxation? And is it something that he's in danger of having issues with long term?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, typically it's something, you know, almost clinically the patient will report. So, you know, from a force standpoint, you know, if this is a primary or first time event, usually takes more force, more substantial trauma to get a complete kind of dislocation of the shoulder versus maybe it's slipping out just a little bit into more of a subluxation type. But if you have an athlete who maybe has some kind of inherent or genetic kind of looseness to their joint, then sometimes these are not that traumatic, if you will. They fly out pretty easily. So even though it's a traumatic event leading to it, sometimes the force involved in that is not that much. You know, so from an athlete's perspective, usually it's a really obvious kind of a clinical issue. So you take somebody who's having maybe their first event of some shoulder looseness. So you take the subluxation that, you know, the patient or the athlete's going to be pretty uncomfortable after that and can kind of, you know, at least feel it or know that something has happened in that area. And they kind of describe it pretty well and feel like, you know, doc, my shoulder popped out and went right back in. Versus an athlete who truly has that kind of full-on dislocation that completely goes out of joint. Those are the type of athletes that, you know, if it's first one, tons of pain, usually need somebody to push it or pop it back in place for them. And obviously a much more traumatic event and usually involves, you know, staff is out there helping them put it back in place. And everybody kind of knows that was that full-on, you know, dislocation of it. So from a, you know, standpoint of going forward from here, so first, obviously, if it's a big dislocation of that, you need to get it back in place as soon as you can. Obviously, the quicker you get to these, the easier that'll go back in. Having seen a ton of these, we've got kind of a variety of techniques to put these back in fairly atraumatically, even on the field, and check the majority of these do go back in very easily on the field to see, do the right technique. From a subluxation standpoint, typically you get there and it's, you know, if the athlete's down in the field, it's already back in place. They're just more sore. And from a treatment perspective, if it's subluxing, so not completely coming out, then you have a better chance of doing a rehab program, getting them better. Question is, you know, when do you get them back? You know, our rule of thumb from either a subluxation or dislocation is full strength, full motion. You can go back and play. That's pretty bearable for a lot of athletes. Could be a couple days. Could be the same game that they can go back if those things return. Most of the time takes a couple of weeks. I would assume in Honey Badger's case, they're probably going to be a bit more cautious with him. It sounds like they put a kind of 6-week number out there, which seems a bit conservative, where they're going to do a rehab program with him. Again, that seems a bit conservative. I'm assuming they're probably going to do some more tests, for example, maybe an MRI, and that number will probably shorten up to maybe a week or two or 3 or 4 max.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Talk Wednesday. We're talking Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu. So Honey Badger's trying to make a tackle, trying to pull a guy down for Carolina, and he braced himself, and the weight of his and the player fell on his arm. He kind of popped it back in. He played one more play and then said it didn't feel right, and he lost some strength. Moving forward here, he's kind of a nickel safety hybrid guy against the pass. You know how physical secondary players got to be, especially against big wideouts. Is this something that's a concern, Dr. Brandon, moving forward with his ability to keep strength in this area?
Yeah, you know, I think acutely that's going to be, you hit it just right. You know, the strength part's going to be the big issue. From a motion standpoint, I'm sure he'll recover that fairly quickly, but having enough strength to do what he needs to do to catch those guys off the line, to make the tackles and hits he needs to have, and also to kind of have that reach and strength to knock a ball down, that's going to be the big issue the next couple of weeks, at least acutely. You know, the thing we worry about more kind of long-term with these is shoulder instability in a contact sport athlete, football wrestlers. It's a big issue. You know, when you look at the studies kind of across the board, you know, the younger you are, you know, higher level contact sports you play, the more of a risk there is of kind of continuing to have recurrent instability. And that's kind of the big thing in the sports medicine world is how do you prevent recurrent instability? That's really what we worry about. It's pretty easy to recover and get back from these things, at least acutely. But again, what's going to prevent you from continuing to have instability events? And that's kind of where our focus is now. I'm sure that's what their focus is for him. And so that's the big question for him going forward is, you know, one, he should get the strength back. It may take him a couple of weeks, but will he continue to have instability events that potentially could injure structures in his shoulder and, more importantly, develop a situation where he's having kind of chronic instability? So no matter, you know, who he hits, lifting weights, simple activities, maybe that shoulder feels like it's slipping out of place. then that would be something that would push him into, you know, a surgery procedure to tighten up the shoulder, which it worked very well. But also, you go back to a high-level contact sport, there is, you know, a failure rate associated with that, which can be as high as 5 or 10% of kind of a recurrent instability. So as a contact athlete, especially defensive player, you really do start to worry about that category developing. Again, that's that chronic instability category.
Long term, I mean, he's a guy they gambled on because of character issues. He's turned his life around. He's survived two major surgeries. And now you have this shoulder that's not as severe as the ACLs he's had on each knee. But from a risk management standpoint, has he had enough mileage put on him to contemplate maybe not extending him?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there still needs to be some time to pass here and figure out what he's going to do in terms of his rehab. You know, if he's a guy that does great with his rehab and really doesn't experience much in the way of instability, then I think you definitely, you know, give that guy another contract with the way he's been playing. But if he's a guy that does develop, you know, further instability, maybe does need that, you know, procedure to be done, you know, then it definitely throws up some question marks, you know, in terms of his durability. That's always tough. You know, that's a really difficult decision to make as a front office, you know, coaches, too, with those kind of players, is he can be, you know, make a huge impact. He could still come back and be a fabulous player, but there's definitely some kind of unknowns that are there. You know, right now it'd be hard to make that call, but I do think they'll be watching him very closely over the next probably, you know, month or two to see how well he recovers and if surgery is potentially, you know, a possibility for him.
Dr. Brandon, thanks for a few minutes today.
Absolutely, Chris. Take care, bud.
Former black shirt, Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Okay. 4 hours. It'll say 30 minutes. We'll know who your champion is for Major League Baseball. Will we see Ricky Vaughn tonight? That's my question.
Well, I think I did see the real Charlie Sheen packing some things and heading towards there. So
yes, that's what I'm wondering. Has the live chicken been brought in for tonight?
Bats. They are sick. I cannot hit third ball. Straight ball, I hit it very much. Curveball. Bats are afraid. I asked Joe Boo to come. Take fear from bats. I offered him cigar and rum. He will come.
You know, you might think about taking Jesus Christ as your savior instead of fooling around with all this stuff.
Ah. Jesus. I like him very much. But he no help. Curveball.
You trying to say Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
Okay, Harris, let's not start a holy war here.
Now, we were unable to get there. I wouldn't leave the rum sitting around with this bunch. It's okay. Listen, we played you a Harry Carey clip. We played you a Pedro Serrano clip. What more do you want? How about a great Game 7? I said Cleveland in 7. TJ, what happens tonight?
Cleveland in 7.
Is it Miller time? Come on now.
Yeah, usually game sevens aren't the most well played just because everybody's high on anxiety and tense, a lot of drama.
I did see in Chicago the buses in Chicago were bringing in police officers to help control the crowd outside Wrigley and in Wrigleyville tonight.
Yeah, I think I'm going with the Indians gaining an early lead in that bullpen, shutting the Cubs down.
Yeah.
I think that's how it plays out.
Well, I will say this, and I mean it with all sincerity. It's really okay to wait till next year because you'll be darn good again.
Yeah.
Cub fan.
That's for sure.
If it doesn't happen. But neither fan base right now, they love this moment. They hate this moment because they're a nervous wreck.
I'm hearing of many
people. Something about a pregnant nun. I mean, that's as nervous as.
I'm hearing of many people gathering in the rail yard to watch the game on the cube.
Yeah. Yeah. Wear a stocking hat. But that'll be, yeah, that's going to be a It's going to be a party down there. So good enough. Tomorrow on the show, Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch. Tim's covered the Ohio State Buckeyes for a number of years, friend of the show. Tim will be with us. Gary Barnett will be with us about an hour in front of UCLA, Colorado. He has a Thursday night game. So that is on the docket. Jay Bird's working on a famous former Ohio State I-back, not named Robert Smith, to join us tomorrow. So that may happen as well. We'll get you ready for Nebraska, Ohio State. Thoughts on Cleveland, Chicago. Big thanks to Jerry DiNardo today. Many thanks to Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, and Brad Edwards of ESPN College Football. TJ Henning, Chris Schmidt, thanks for your time. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your input on the Big Ten Friday Night Football decision. Back with you tomorrow. Find us at 4 Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.